Hey, Boker Tov. How's the volume at this point? Good? Anyone need more? Okay. You want a bit more? Yeah. Can you turn me up a bit? Thank you. Did that make a difference for you? Yep, we're good now? Okay. So, before we explore the practice today, I just have a couple of things as reminders. So, we're going to continue with the group meetings. Hopefully everybody got a sense of how they're working. So there's that list there, and you'll be assigned to a group, and then you're invited. And we really hope that you will come to the group at that time in the location that it says. Okay. That might be the easiest thing I'm going to say today. Already something you're familiar with, very simple to describe, that's all we have to do. So let's get complicated in a very simple way. The next thing is that some yogis have mentioned to us that occasionally they felt like the silence hasn't been fully supported. Yeah? So imagine that. Someone was using their voice and making sounds close by to someone else, and silence wasn't able to survive in that period. So the silence is a really delicate thing that can easily be disturbed. Yeah, and so it's understandable that at times there can be an urge to speak, to say something, to reach out, to be supported. But in that moment, then, actually, one of the most precious and significant things that it takes so much effort to create here, which actually really makes this a retreat, can't survive in those conditions. Yeah. So it's a gift that we give to this retreat. It's a way that we create this opportunity for each other, is by supporting that silence. So we're here to support you. If you have something that you want to share, that you want to explore, that feels like you'd like to reach out for support, you're really welcome. So write to us. If it's practical, leave a note to the managers. And over time, maybe we can kind of extend and support a deeper, wider silence. So sometimes there's the temptation maybe to go up to the managers, and it's just going to take a moment. I'm just going to speak to them, and they're going to speak to me, and then it's all done. No note, But really, it also, you know, draws the attention away from us being present with our direct experience. Okay? We may look busy. It's a look that we put on at times. Yeah. And the other yogi, they really might not look busy at all. You know, but they are actually really fully engaged in their present moment experience. And so go to the busy people. Yeah, approach us. Let us support you. Yeah, and that would be really great. Okay? So now you've been very gently told off in an English accent, and I hope you feel very loved and supported and happy to be here. So today's instruction is, once again, a suggestion, an invitation, yeah? An invitation to, we could say, turn our attention to a subtle element of our experience. But two things to keep in mind. One, it might not be the right time to be doing that. Yeah, so it might be like, okay, I'm just going to listen to this, maybe later. All going well, it's being recorded, and even if it doesn't, it's been recorded before, this kind of thing, you can find out about this stuff, you'll be able to pick this up later on. It's a teaching that's been hanging around for 2,600 years. If today's not the right day, we can do it a little bit later on, right? So no pressure there. Even if we do go for it, keep supporting it with the kinds of practices that we have been doing over the days. These are the really kind of precious foundation kinds of practices that we want to be supporting. So keep developing that kind of gathered attention. Yeah, keep supporting ourselves. That say, you know, to maybe what's maybe this is actually a good time to decide. Right, we had a few options here. Maybe just to decide what's going to be the base, the foundation of my practice. Yeah, is it the metta? Is that going to be the primary practice? Not the exclusive practice, but the primary practice. What I go to, what I do. And then when it's not working, maybe I step out, oh, maybe some breath, maybe some sounds, and I come back into the metta. Metta's my base practice, my foundation. And when that's stable, then maybe I drop in, I'm going to notice the Vedana. Or other, what we call, you know, insight practices. Practices that, they have that intelligence, they have that understanding, they have that, there must be a Vedana here. And then we come back again to this base practice. So kind of the obvious base practices for us could be, you know, breathing, the longer, more comfortable way of breathing, the metta practice, or maybe it's with the sounds, that open palm, listening to sounds, receiving, appearing, disappearing. Yeah. And that would be what I would suggest as a sense of a thing to have. So already now it might be obvious, what practice do I really enjoy? What would I like to really cultivate and support and stay with? Then, okay, thanks. So, let's take a small interval, actually, for another helpful announcement, which is, as we talk about something like Vedana, it's quite subtle, sometimes the language is quite precise, and it might be helpful to have a Hebrew translation for this. Like, generally, you can understand someone who speaks in English, but then when it gets really precise like this, it might be helpful to have a translation. Is there anyone who feels that might be the case? Yeah. Great. So how should we set this up? Okay, great. So we will have some translations, and it can be, we'll just, yeah. So if you come, yep. So gather near the door, and you can see if it's whether you want to have like a rolling translation, or it's just like you turn to Amichai and say, "What's that word?" And we'll do it like that. So you can decide with him now. That's great. Yeah, they're going to switch back and forth, but yeah, if you want to sit somewhere. Yeah. Okay. We're good? So as we were saying yesterday, in simple terms, any time there is an appearance in consciousness, we make contact through our senses, with a sensory experience, that comes with it this kind of categorization, what I was calling a niceness opinion, yeah, or some kind of prediction about whether this is going to be nice for me or not nice for me, and it kind of starts to set up a reaction chain in our experience, okay? Now, we can just take that on faith. This is something that happens. We can just say, okay, that's the view that we're holding today. So I thought for myself, I wonder what that would be in Hebrew. And I kind of stumbled around a little bit, and then I asked for someone who can actually speak Hebrew to give me some help. And we came up with, I'll say it, and then you can tell me if it sounds like Hebrew words to you. Dea al neimut. 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 Yeah? Dea al neimut. Yeah? So again, same as in English, it's not really a phrase that we would use, you know, so we might have to work a little bit with it. But there's a few things which are important about this this experience. Yeah. It's not a thought, right? It's not another of those thoughts that we have. It's something that kind of comes together as it's happening, and it's almost like something we know about the experience. So do you notice, you know, you hear the air conditioner, and you're like, oh yeah, that's the air conditioner. Same thing, there's also with that, just as that label air conditioner has been associated to this collection of vibrations, and it's like, oh yeah, I know what that is. We also know in that moment that it's nice or it's not nice, or it's neither nice nor not nice for me in this moment in time. Yeah. But it doesn't get taken as an opinion, it gets taken as a fact. That is an air conditioner. And I don't really care about the sound, you know, so whatever, yeah. Comes together. They're always there, we say, in these teachings. Why it's important is because it leads to either we ignore the air conditioner because it's not particularly nice and it's not really a big problem, you know, and then maybe occasionally it starts to rattle and we're like, no, that now that's not nice. You know, the hum, that's fine, it's neither nor, I can ignore it. The rattle, that's not good, someone needs to fix this, I'm going to leave a note to the managers if someone doesn't get up and turn that thing off, you know. Something has to be done. Leads, the immediate thing is a bit of reactivity, and then it builds reactivity in that way. Yeah. If it starts purring in a way and we realize that's actually really nice, it's melting my body and easing the stress and the tension in the mind, I'm going to get one of those air conditioners for home, practice next to it. This is the stuff, you know. So we see, we take it as a fact, and then it leads to this story, this build-up, or the whole kind of thing. The goal of Vedana practice is not to stop all Vedanas. Vedanas are not a problem, yeah? We don't need to make them a problem. It's not like, have an experience with no Vedana in it, and that's liberation. It is liberation, but let's not think that way at this moment. Like, it's not trying to stop Vedanas. What we're trying to stop is that building up, that builds up the sense of me, it builds up the sense of what I have to do, and it builds up the sense of stress and dukkha and reactivity. Okay. It's usually important at this point that you might have a frequently asked question, the FAQ, which is, but aren't there things in the world that are unpleasant and need to be responded to? And the answer is yes. This is not a suggestion of how to lead the rest of your life. This is a meditation instruction to see what happens if we don't react to everything that comes up. Because everything that comes up has a Vedana. It would be very tiring. It is very tiring to be reactive all of the time. And we're seeing, well, what happens if I'm not reactive to everything? That some things, it really doesn't matter. It's unpleasant. Fine. It's fine. It's unpleasant. It's pleasant. Fine. It's pleasant. As an experiment, as an experience, what's it like to do that? So as we said, this really opens out the realm of possibilities. Once we start to notice, that's something that happens. Then what becomes an appropriate response for us? One of the ways we might want to drop this in occasionally in our experience is you might overlook that it's very pleasant to be gathered. Yeah? Just to be here meditating is actually subtly a pleasant experience. When we're not meditating, that is to say, when we're distracted, when the thoughts have gone, you know, into some future time, they're not in the present moment anymore, or they've gone into some past, they're not in the present moment anymore, and they're not embodied. Yeah, you know, the heart, the mind, it can go, it's a space-time traveller. You've probably noticed that, yeah? It doesn't seem to feel like hanging out in the body as much as you would think, especially considering the fact that it's actually nicer. Yeah. So we use this word distracted in English. It's a lovely word, and it has a nice meaning if you break it up. To dis is to pull apart something. To distract, I mean, to tract is to pull. Dis is apart, so it's like to pull apart. When we're distracted, which is to say we're off in a different space-time and the body's left behind, we feel pulled apart. And when we come back and we get gathered, then it feels nice. Feels nice because it's, as far as I can tell, the body, the heart and the mind, they like being together. Almost like they're friends or a gang. You say, hey, meditation is getting that gang together. And then, you know, you can invite other things to the party as well. Maybe the breath wants to come in and have its kind of time on the dance floor, going up and down, its familiar moves. Or maybe it wants to get creative and do those really funky moves, like Zara was saying, where it dances up through the base of the feet and out the top of the head or whatever, yeah? So you get the gang together, and then you can have the party, yeah, and enjoy the experience. So it's helpful to notice the Vedana of distraction. I'm distracted. I also feel like, oh, I'm just going to finish that thought because it's a good thought. But actually, feel into it. It's unpleasant. It's a stretch. It's a strain. Doesn't feel wholesome. Doesn't feel really as good as just this next breath that's present, that's felt. Awareness embodied and spread through the being. Attentiveness, sensitive, delicate. Yeah. So see for yourself, but that can be helpful to see. As a further insight practice, there's kind of bonus insights onto this experience. The Vedana always refers to me. Yeah? The Vedana is always referring to me. It's pleasant, it's unpleasant for me. It's a me story. Yeah? Me, 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 me. A friend of mine once made a t-shirt. It said, me, 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 boring, boring, boring. It's not the most enjoyable way of leading a life, to be me-focused, yeah? And so just noticing, oh, it's about me. It's not about it, actually. Second really important point about Vedana is it's added on top of the sensory experience. And again, we're not trying to stop things getting added on top, but we're just noticing, oh, it's not that, you know, the air conditioner is nice or not nice, or neither nice nor not nice. So it's in reference to me. Me changes over time. My mood changes. And how I am changes. Also, this Vedana changes, because it's just dependently arising on top of that. Yeah. So it's not that it exists to the thing that it gets labeled to. All of which means it will change. It will change over time, because it depends on other causes and conditions, because it depends on us. Nothing is fixed. Yeah. So just a reminder to come back again, then the so what? So why are we doing this? Because when we don't rest with attentiveness to that, it often leads to this push and pull, demanding reactivity, solidifying of the self, the issue, the thing. And that's not so enjoyable. What tends to be more enjoyable for us is the subtlizing, the quietening, the easing, the releasing, the relaxing of tension, the spaciousness, and that delicate attention. It feels really nice to tune into. For most of us, most of the time, yeah? So we're cultivating ourselves towards a subtler, but still pleasant, Vedana, right? Through the way that we relate to Vedana. So in short, Vedana practice is another way that we can move away from the reactivity and the building up of the construction into dukkha. At any time, any experience is having a Vedana. This moment now, this talk, this conversation, this atmosphere in the hall, whatever we tune into has a Vedana. And if we start tuning into the things within that, you know, so that atmosphere in the hall, you know, the person next to me, the space above me, or whatever, everything that we contact has a Vedana. It can be very subtle. But it also means it's really a helpful thing, particularly when things get really built up. I can just remind myself, oh, this is unpleasant. And I'm probably reacting to it. I'm probably pushing it away. Or I'm trying to escape it. But in this moment, it's already arrived in awareness. And I have possibilities. I can soften. I can ease. I could practice metta. Yeah. That first step is just to notice, oh, this is unpleasant. And maybe I can be with that. Maybe I can still breathe. Maybe I can still relax the shoulders. Yeah. So, in English, I call this untangling the tangle. You know, when you get a load of string and it's been sat, not wrapped up in a good way, and you kind of pick it up, it's all entangled, it's all threaded through itself. And Vedana is just a way of like, oh yeah, unpleasant and pleasant, unpleasant, mostly unpleasant, that kind of overlooked and ignored, the neither nor. It's like, oh yeah, this is what this experience is, and it opens and releases and allows to come through. And so we can also bring this practice in at times to avoid that building up. It's like we just rest the attention at the level of Vedana. So how would this look as a practice? We would build up, sustain, maybe we're doing some metta, we're doing the breath or sounds as our base practice. And then we get to a point and we feel like, actually there's a lot of calmness here, there's a lot of steadiness, kind of more or less noticing a series of breaths in a comfortable way. And just rest at the level of Vedana. And these sensations arising, oh yeah, unpleasant. Well, that would often cause reactivity, just unpleasant, still breathing. And I'm kind of just including that in as a kind of a foreground and then background kind of sense every so often. Really helps to support us at a more simplified, more bare level of attention than we normally get into, the more built-up ways. Something it's interesting to notice, actually, is that attention has a Vedana. Attention has a Vedana. When we pay attention to something, I mentioned this before, it has like a subtle metta in attention. Yeah? If I sat here and none of you gave me any of your attention, I might feel slightly rejected. Yeah? You're giving your attention, it's a real act of kindness. Your attention could be going anywhere right now, but you're kindly directing it towards me. My attention could be going anywhere, and I'm kindly directing it towards you. And when we tune into it, we can actually feel that, oh, there's an act of kindness here going on. When you pay attention to the breath, isn't it also an act of kindness? When you pay attention to those sounds, you allow those sounds to be alive, to be known, to be felt, to be sensed. When we start paying attention to experience, that Vedana impacts the Vedana it appeared to have. If something's felt to be not nice, and we give it the kind of attention which says, you're not nice, you're not welcome in attention, you can see how that builds, that quality. The two not nices don't neutralize each other, they build each other. Whereas, oh, you're not nice, but you're still welcome in attention. And that nice of the kindness of attention actually does neutralize that. And it might become more subtle, that not niceness to it. It might even, actually, we think, it's actually not nice from its own side. It's just a frequency I'm not used to hearing. And then more and more of that kindness of attention starts to, I don't know what you say, blend into the experience, and it might even become pleasant. Yeah, some of you felt that, saw that when we did the don't scratch an itch practice. Yeah, sometimes a drop of water comes out of my eye and goes down my face, and I want to get rid of that. And then actually, I really feel it. It's actually very enjoyable. That's delicate. It's enjoyable. It's nice. And enjoying that, we can actually sustain the attention there. Some will know this, and you can actually build, even from a mildly unpleasant or a neutral sensation, a real whole-body sense of well-being, just through cultivating the kindness that's there in the attention. The way we bring attention is superior, more significant than what we're paying attention to. Yeah? There's a real freedom there, real freedom from our own side. It's like, how shall I attend to this? So as always, finding the balance through the day. Lots of this samatha, samadhi, base practice of metta, the breath, the sounds, whatever it is. And then occasionally we can just drop in the opportunity space that something like Vedana practice brings. Okay, so we'll take questions after. And we'll do a little practice together now where we'll just drop this in. So, yeah, please come to your comfortable space in the hall. And if you want a little stretch before we begin, we'll have about 25 minutes of practice. Finding your way to feel as comfortable, so as grounded, as supported, and as aligned as you feel is helpful for this time. And we'll just take a few minutes of practicing that base practice, that foundational practice that we're going to support. I would just emphasize, if we're going to go with the breath and the sounds, really including a kindness, including a bit of noticing the metta in the way that you meet this, that it's welcomed, it's allowed. So as we notice where attention is right now, not rushing to get back to the breath or anything else, just slowing down, being with this. Noticing, if you can, what's the Vedana of this which you're paying attention to in the moment that you pay attention to it. It's not that it really is pleasant or unpleasant, it's not worrying about your intelligent sense, but just almost, are you wanting to have more of this or less of this? Or do you really don't mind? That question is just guiding us towards seeing this as being nice or not nice from its own side. But maybe it's not. Maybe I can just allow this to arise and pass. Invite you to notice the feeling of the face, the expression of the face. And just notice how the face feels. Is it feeling nice or not so nice or neither? What about if we begin inviting the face to relax, to soften? Bringing that kind attention to the eyes and around the eyes, to the jaw, letting the jaw soften. And if the face now feels quite nice, can we just be okay with that without grabbing onto this is the way it should always be? Holding it in kind spaciousness. And if for whatever reason the face doesn't feel all right, doesn't feel nice, we let the kindness of our attention meet that as fully as possible. Let's invite you again to return to your primary practice. working with the body, sensations like the breath. Just notice how it is. What's the Vedana of expanding that intention to bring awareness to the whole of the body? If we're with the sounds, how it is to expand the awareness wider than we normally listen. We're working with the metta phrases, noticing how it is to give gentle kindness or wider sharing of that intention of kindness, as if from more of you. And as we do this practice, just going to acknowledge that the Vedana has a negativity bias. It's going to pull our attention towards not what's not okay. But we're going to choose to pay attention to anything in this experience that is okay. In the body, maybe there's a sensation, maybe the back of the hands, the earlobes, the bottom of the chin, that is okay. Just including that in the sounds that are unfolding, maybe a bird song or the hum. Seeing what it takes to rest the attention at an enjoyable Vedana. So again, just practicing when the tension gets drawn into what's not okay, is there something that is okay? It doesn't have to be amazing. But it can be. So we've been practicing noticing the Vedana and inclining the attention towards what's more pleasant, in a way we're readjusting for that bias towards seeing the unpleasant, noticing more. For the next few minutes, let's practice just letting go of the reactivity. So when the attention gets pulled towards something that's pleasant, and we want to fix it, escape it, remove it, just notice the Vedana is added on, and we don't need to react. Don't need to follow the signpost. For a moment, just to be with it, this moment, only this moment. And then if it's helpful, so for this moment. Sometimes we'll notice that meeting well changes the Vedana, changes the opinion. Is there something in our experience which is being overlooked? Because it doesn't have a strongly pleasant or unpleasant categorization. Like the sense of hearing, or the sense of physical touch, that we can listen or feel the world, bringing our attention to our sensitivity itself. If there's appreciation, that's fine, it can come through. We're also not going to grab it, hold it. Only hold it lightly. Coming into the last minute of the meditation, which might be already be a sentence with a pleasant Vedana. See if there's anything we can enjoy without grabbing onto that flavor of appreciation, spacious and light. anything at all that is pleasant to be with. So thank you for your continued practice. If you want to include this in your day, you're very invited to. We've put some sheets up on the notice board explaining a little bit more about what this is. In a moment, we'll have some time in here to talk about the practice and help it make more sense or anything else that's relevant for the retreat right now. We won't worry too much about questions about the rest of our lives as we kind of deepen into the retreat. We'll emerge slowly towards the end, and we can address those kinds of things. If you are going to bring this into your practice, even very lightly, I would just encourage you to see if you can notice all three kinds of vedana. Yeah. So unpleasant vedanas and meeting them well, pleasant vedanas, discovering what meeting them well looks like for you, and also things that aren't getting noticed, things that aren't really getting attributed a demanding vedana. Yeah. And then really taking the time, having the sensitivity, notice the impact of this way of looking at life, looking for vedana. What does that do? How does that affect us? Something to keep alive in the experience. There are vedanas in the walking meditation. Walking meditation itself may have a vedana already for you. Yeah, is the idea of walking pleasant or unpleasant, or neither? Yeah, how does that affect whether you do it or not, or how much you do it? Yeah, or whether you do it and you don't like it, and so you promise yourself a cup of tea, and you know, how do you relate to this? How is it to say that walking meditation does not inherently have its own vedana? This is an opinion that's arising according to me in this moment. Maybe then, not following that, it's unpleasant, I'm not going to do it. Maybe it's unpleasant, I'm going to do it and make it as pleasant as possible. Or I'm not going to worry about it being unpleasant, I'm still going to do it. And as we're saying, within a walking meditation, there's going to be moments of pleasure and displeasure and all of that getting attributed to things. It's too hot, it's too bumpy, you know. This is really nice, it's so much better than sitting meditations, or I'm really enjoying seeing people, sensing people. Yeah, just noticing how we hold that, how we relate to that, how we meet that through all the aspects of our experience. And then it would be ridiculous, perhaps, not to mention the biggest vedana experience of the day. Food. How we hold that. How we can think, oh, this is going to be so nice, and then we just switch off after a mouthful or two. And actually chewing food and having it in the mouth, is that pleasant, actually? That, oh, I thought this was going to be so pleasant. Turns out, It has a variety of vedanas, and we can bring that sensitivity in. Yeah, maybe it isn't worth craving lunch as much as I thought, and it's just another sensory experience. Yeah, that I get really excited about, and then, oh yeah, then it's gone. And just watching those waves of experience and sensitivity that we can bring in. So this isn't meant to be a practice of disappointment. It's like, oh, everything's just vedana in the end. But actually opening out that possibility to really enjoy what isn't getting enjoyed. Really notice what isn't getting noticed. That's part of this movement of the subtle. Yeah. So, okay, enough words for me. I wish you well with your practice, however it looks for you today. And if we can be of support, please contact us. And if you want to go out for some walking, really feel invited to do that. If this question, if this practice brings a lot of questions, yeah, then let's see what happens there. And please stay, and we'll share those together. Thank you.